Is she doing the introduction or are you?
I sure am.
Lou's in charge. She's in the in charge seat.
Holy moly, she is driving.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Shift Extension podcast.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. What did we talk about last week?
What about mistakes?
That's right.
Depends on the order in which I am.
Being scared of mistakes.
Yes. What are we talking about today, fellas?
Well, I left it up to you.
Yeah, right.
What do you want to talk about, Lou?
Well, as a paramedic student.
Student.
I would like to know what careers I can do as a paramedic other than just jurisdictional state ambulances. What is there to offer me?
Are you saying there are?
I don't know.
No such thing as a paramedic outside an ambulance service, Lou.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And podcast.
Well, then there's no point to this podcast.
it's the only career.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Wrong.
I'm curious.
It's an interesting question, Lou, because post... Nick, correct me, 2018, there was no national registration in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
We had, I'm going to throw a number at you just by making it up. We had about 20,000 paramedics running around the country with no clinical authority. And so the only place that paramedics could realistically work was under the guidance of a medical director, which would then limit you to either a jurisdictional state service or a private company on a mine site, which also had a medical director, and other ones whose clinical authority you worked under. Fast forward, 2018, national registration, everyone celebrated. We are at the end of a long journey, but we're not. We're at the beginning. Mm. There is still this cultural lead from the days of old that dictate a paramedic works in an ambulance service. And when you actually look at the influence the profession suffers from the ambulance creep, I would be hard-pressed to find a senior academic in the country who's worked outside of a jurisdictional service. Therefore, all of the next generation are going to be influenced by the ambulance creep, and then we lose the creativity that actually builds a profession. Nick, have I gone too far?
No, not at all. You're on the money.
We've both worked in jurisdictional services. I've actually worked in several. I think I've worked in half a dozen around the country. So there's no debate. Majority of a paramedic's work and workforce around the world is in an ambulance service. But very simply, wherever people go, some form of healthcare support has got to follow. So in places where there are no paramedics yet, it's still nurses and doctors. But historically, they are also quite used to working around hospitals and infrastructure and things like that, whereas paramedics are literally the profession who's working outside of those. And so wherever there's people working in areas that need healthcare that are outside of hospitals, this should be paramedic-led. But again, the influence of the ambulance has, in my opinion, stifled the creativity to actually get paramedics in those places. So this is why I think conversations like this are super important, because you're next gen. And Nick and I have both been very successful in flirting with roles outside of ambulance services, and incredibly successfully. Mm. There's a number of different things you can do. We've already referenced the resource sector. There's huge opportunities for there to professionally develop in places that a lot of, this is in quotation marks, on-road paramedics and jurisdictional services won't do. But then there's so many other exciting avenues to explore. Film sets, research projects, expeditionary medicine, humanitarian healthcare deployments, private flight medicine, retrieval. Nick, you were just organising a barley retrieval yesterday, weren't you?
Retrieval from PNG.
Oh, sorry. Was there a barley one?
No. Oh, we did a barley one a few weeks ago.
Crossing lines there, Lou. But these are the opportunities that I think are not broadcast and not shared with the students and the next generation paramedics enough. No.
Yeah, definitely not in the uni environment as well.
And I think it literally translates to my entire academic experience has been every professor who's been above me has always had this. Oh, how do I say it without offending? Well, sometimes you got to offend. But it's just so many of the professors who do lead these programs have literally only had one experience, and that's been in ambulance services. And so the notion of I've been a paramedic for 40 years but only been in one service, I don't think actually puts some of the people in the right place to be advising on this. I'm not saying they shouldn't be in professors or academic positions, but it's just they should ask for assistance from people who are actually walking this walk. And this is why Nick and I spend so much time valuing students and graduates, because you guys are a different generation to us. You guys are doing different things to us, and you guys are looking at things completely differently. So, you know, for some reason, it's almost an offensive statement to suggest that we're going to try and develop the students to be better than us, but that's exactly where we should be. And if we're going to do that, we should literally use students as stakeholders to develop the programs that are going to actually develop the profession.
Mm.
So it's a long-winded way around, but what was the question?
That's a great question. The question, I think, was, if I even asked it, what are these other options, you know, that students can start looking into now, or even qualified paramedics?
Actually, we had some questions, didn't we?
We did, but we'll get to them in a moment because I have a very important question.
Oh, go. Floor's yours.
What do you want from a job?
Job security.
All right, so you want security.
You want security.
You want money in your bank account every fortnight.
Mm-hmm.
So you can pay the mortgage.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And buy your cat treats.
Yes.
What else do you want?
Ooh.
What's job security mean, just for someone like me?
That's a great question. As someone that's been a casual their whole working life, I couldn't tell you. What is it? What does it mean?
Because I think job security means different things to different people based on your experiences. So, for example, a friend of mine is an engineer and they never get job security for greater than the length of the project that they're on at the time. And once the project's up, that's it. They have to go looking for another job. But they see job security as months to single years. Whereas if you're going into a traditionally government role, job security is decades.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and there's paid holidays as well, you know.
Like film crew, how long do they have job security for?
3 to 6 months, if they're lucky, 1 year.
Yeah.
And there's no guarantee of any work after that.
Yeah.
But to them, that's job security by the nature of the work that they do. Mm. So security, that can mean different things to different people. What else?
Yeah, it's all relative. Having a claim to something, you know, like that's probably getting a little bit egotistical.
Oh, you're talking about like status.
Yeah. Okay. What do you think about that?
Yet.
Yeah. But not identity. What do you call that? Fusion.
What's the difference between status and identity?
It's going to be a thin line.
Well, does status change? Is status fluent?
Like, are they trying to find themselves in a different part of the social hierarchy, if such exists? So it's not as much of a class system here that there was in previous generations or other countries, but are they looking to move themselves into a different sphere of society and give themselves a different label to maybe, you know, satisfy certain personality
insecurities,
traits? Maybe. Because that's a different ballpark. What else? What's the big ticket item? What does everyone want from a job?
Money.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, money.
Dollary.
Oh, I thought we said money.
Did we say that?
We said security.
Sorry. I should have cut yous off. Money.
Yeah, money.
I work for money. Mm-hmm. I see here people win a lot on, like, I go to work the next day. I'm like, what a waste.
Why?
I would be done. I'd be Sonny the Terrible Surfer.
Sonny the Tide. Money. That's the big thing.
That's the big thing.
With that comes job security.
Yes.
They sort of come in hand in hand.
Well, then again, if someone said, I'll give you a job for 3 months, but I'll pay you $1 million a week, I'd be like, the security's not great, but I'll take the dollar it is.
Yep. Yeah.
What else? We talked about it the other day.
Did we?
Yeah, on the phone.
Gosh. We spoke about
why people are sad.
Why are they sad?
Because they lack
food.
Sorry.
Confidence. They lack. What does it start with?
Purpose.
Purpose. Oh.
It starts with P. P.
What did you say?
Purpose.
Purpose. It gives you purpose. You know, you're doing something that's exciting and it's different. It gives you purpose to want to get up and put your clothes on and hopefully and go to work.
I was reading a book about, I can't remember the title. It was about something, but it was talking about this concept of purpose. And they took two bricklayers. And they were building a wall for a church. And they asked the first guy, what are you doing? He said, I'm building a wall. And they asked the second guy, and they said, what are you doing? He goes, I'm building the house of God. Doing the same task, but they saw it with different levels of purpose. So they're getting different things out of that role.
Yeah.
So I think for a lot of people, and maybe for a lot of paramedics, they go into it with levels of altruism and a sense of responsibility and doing good for their community. And there's a level of purpose. And I think everyone wants purpose in their job. They don't want to have a meaningless job that doesn't give them personal satisfaction or satisfaction for their family or their community or their group. Mm. I think it's a big driver. And that's why you see a lot of very angry, disenfranchised,
disgruntled
paramedics who are on making a lot of money because they either don't have purpose anymore, they don't feel they have purpose, their status, or they're tired, or they're not getting out of the job what they want to get out of the job anymore. Now, where do you think is going to give you security money? Well, they're the two big things, right?
Yeah.
Security money, because at the end of the day, I can't go to my bank and say, hey, I'm doing good stuff. You should give me a month off my mortgage. How about that? And like, yeah, Nick, doing good stuff. Have a free month. They don't care.
No.
How good? Imagine if you could pay your mortgage in like good vibes.
Good vibes, good intentions.
Right? So at the end of the day, it comes down to security and dollar dues.
Yeah. And where does that come from?
Where does that come from?
Government jobs, right?
That's it. And I think that's always been the traditional.
Does it though? I mean, this is the thing is
does it?
Yeah. Private
does
sector it? Jobs are paid so much better
but
with less of the so-called job security sometimes. But
see, I wouldn't know that. And I think a lot of people wouldn't know that either. And I think there's myths around the understanding of what you are getting paid or at least what you're getting out of that job.
And I think traditionally, if you're a paramedic and you want the best job security and pretty good money and a statutory jurisdictional ambulance service is where you're going to get that from. Okay. Are you necessarily going to find all the purpose? Maybe not. But there's other opportunities out there that may not give you the same government security or the same dollar dues, but it'll fill you with different outcomes that are exceptionally beneficial to your career and to your experiences and can make you a more well-rounded paramedic in the long run.
When you speak about status, I mean, status means a lot of different things to different people, yeah, the sense of purpose, et cetera. Why do you want to be a paramedic, Lou?
Why do you want to – why did you – can what? I flip that?
You can.
Because I do not like answering this question.
I have a
question.
Very unacademic
Let's
answer.
Go.
So I've asked this at numerous events with students and I get the same rubbish. I want to help people. I want to do the right thing. I want to help my community. And I'm sorry, it's all crap. All of us want to help people,
can
I'm sure.
Can I be honest though?
Yeah.
I hate answering that question because mine always comes back to money.
That's okay.
But I can't say that.
No, you can. It shouldn't be frowned upon because there's no point doing a job unless you're being paid.
Yeah. Sorry,
No, literally why I wanted to be a paramedic, right? If you'd asked me when I started, way back when, I would have said all those same things that people say to me, right? But now reflecting on it, nearly two decades later, I can say that I wanted to be a paramedic because I wanted to be important. I wanted to matter and I wanted to have purpose. So interestingly, whilst so many of us actually go into the paramedic career with this notion of being altruistic, actually ingrained inside us is actually a selfish desire to be important, right? It's actually called the hero complex. Police, ambulance, fire, defense, they all suffer from, I shouldn't use the word suffer, but they are all affected by different levels of this hero complex where we actually need to be important. And so we actually get that feeling of being important by helping people who are vulnerable compared to us. It actually gives us status above them. And until we actually start unpacking that, you know, and reflecting on that honestly, I think it actually sets a lot of people up to fail because are we actually getting what we intended to out of the job?
Mm.
And, you know, I mean, there's so many other factors in paramed, you know, like long shifts, shift extensions, missed meals, you know, getting repeatedly dispatched to jobs that you don't necessarily value or think are important.
Fatigue.
Yeah, all of those things come into play, but all of them do also lead to sometimes career burnout and things like that.
Mm.
And this is why when we start talking about other avenues for paramedics to operate in, it creates excitement. It creates like these sparkly eyes because they're like, oh my God, tell me.
There's other options?
There's other options.
What do you mean?
And there's other well-paid options, there's other poorly paid options, there's other status options, there's other poorly status options. But there is actually so much we can do in the paramedic field. I mean, look, 200 years ago when, you know, the European ships were still sailing around half the planet claiming what they wanted to claim, the second most important person on that vessel was actually the expedition doctor. Because they needed to take healthcare with them. So expedition medicine is not a new concept. Expedition, remote and extreme environment healthcare has been around since literally caveman communities were moving between areas. Someone was going to be responsible for helping someone. So it's not a new concept, but it's just with the development of so many technological advances and things too, we're taking things like point of care testing and interventions further and further in the field. So where things were only in hospital, then they were in pre-hospital. And when they're in pre-hospital or ambulance, now they're actually going further afield than that and actually becoming backpackable. So with that, paramedics are also being positioned to be the most desired healthcare professional.
Can I just jump in there? You mentioned, you said pre-hospital.
Yes.
Does pre-hospital not set you up to think that every patient is going to go to hospital?
Yes.
Do you think that that is a bad word, or at least has not a negative connotation to it, but at least when we say pre-hospital, we're expecting that we're going to go to hospital, like patients?
It's a legacy word.
Yeah.
It's what we've always used because back in the day, 30, 40 years ago, you turn up, you put them in the car, you take them to hospital.
Put them in the cart.
The cart. With the horse.
With the donkey. Right? That's what you did. Everyone went to hospital. But here's your blanket. They're there.
Yeah.
Maybe you will get some oxygen. We go to hospital.
Yes.
So it was always pre-hospital. That's what we did. And now we need to transition that to out of hospital because not everyone goes to a hospital now. And here's something contentious. Traditionally, we think paramedics do pre-hospital, but why can't other healthcare clinicians work out of hospital?
Mm.
And why can't paramedics work in a hospital?
Oh.
Well, we do. And this is
controversial.
There was a transition. It's a great point to identify too. I still use things like pre-hospitals so people know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It did transition to out-of-hospital healthcare when people identified exactly what you just said, except like Nick said, not all paramedics actually work in the out-of-hospital environment. And not all healthcare providers work in the in-hospital environment. So talking about out-of-hospital healthcare still doesn't speak to where paramedics can potentially work. And so then there's this transition to in paramedic care.
Mm.
But because of the slow development in the profession, even that terminology has been misunderstood. People don't understand what that means. I mean, it's self-descriptive. In paramedic care, in the care of a paramedic, regardless of where you are.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
But it's been hard.
Mm.
So I think like one of the alternative careers that we will hopefully see in the next years to decades is paramedics working in non-traditional roles, like in an emergency department, in a GP practice, assisting a surgeon with a list. We saw some of that stuff happening during COVID out of necessity. We saw paramedics working in EDs in Victoria. Mm-hmm. We have private paramedics working in emergency departments in remote places in Western Australia at the moment. These things are coming, and this medical sphere or their health departments will have to look at ways to innovate, because just adding more money and resources and the traditional models of healthcare delivery at the moment won't work. You have to innovate. But before we get onto that, let's just list off a bunch of the current alternative careers for a paramedic than a jurisdictional ambulance service.
The titles are made up. And that's you lose laughing at me. The titles for these roles are made up. They are not defined by any peak body because it doesn't exist. You're back on. the definitions are made up because they're not defined by any peak bodies. The irony is people will smirk and, you know, question the professionalism around that. When the irony is, if you look at another article by Matt Wilkinson Stokes, he actually compared how many different names paramedics were known as in jurisdictional services. And I think he came up with 35 different titles to describe what paramedics do in the 8 jurisdictional services across Australia. Check the numbers. I could be wrong. Matt, I apologise if they were wrong. But it's everything from wilderness paramedic to advanced life support paramedic to advanced care paramedic to intensive care paramedic to MICA to flight paramedic. Like, there are so many different definitions, and yet there's only one registration level, which is paramedic. Now, that registration level might change because things do develop and evolve. But the point I'm making is the journey to professionalization or national registration is the start of a very long journey now that we're there, because there's a lot of movement to nationalize the standards of paramedic care across even just the ambulance services, but then also look at what's happening in the private sector. So if we were to list off just a couple off the top of my head, Nick, there's an expedition paramedic. Now, even within the expedition paramedic definition, There are so many subspecialties, I can't list them all, but there would be dive medicine, polar medicine, altitude medicine, tropical medicine, desert medicine. The list goes on, and it's because people who are working in those environments have got to have specialist skills to actually not just survive in those environments, to thrive enough to take care of people. We move away from expeditionary, can move into humanitarian. Humanitarian can even be broken down into natural and human. Same with disaster medicine, natural and human. So there's areas that we can subspecialize in those. There's the resource sector, which have their own definitions for rescue paramedic and emergency service officer and all kinds of things that operate in different ways in different remote and extreme environments. Again, it comes back to, well, what are these things? If our profession is still struggling to even identify what happens in the jurisdictional services, which we see, you know, 95% of our, that's a made up statistic, but 95% of our focus, especially in our education on, if we can't even define that, how are we going to define things that are happening outside? And that's literally where people are trailblazers, people are trendsetters, and people are literally practicing in a gray area of paramedicine that has just not existed before. And we need far more attention and more encouragement on it, because it's an exciting place to operate. It's an exciting place for paramedics to even consider. But then we've got to talk about autonomous practice. And this isn't well received, Lou.
So I've heard.
Now, you've heard yourself, you know, on your placements and through your, you know, educational journey, people talk about autonomous practice, right? People want to be, I want to be a paramedic because I can work autonomously. Now, to say I laugh at such notion would be quite egotistical and arrogant, but it does amuse me because when people use words like autonomous, I'm seeing people who have never stepped outside of a jurisdictional service using the word autonomous. And it does amuse me because you've got the support of a medical director, you've got the support of an on-call consultant, and you've got the support of CPGs, which actually tell you what you can and can't do. When you step outside of a jurisdictional service, none of those exist. And so we've actually got to unpack what a paramedic is from the most basic and core, right? So even something as simple as morphine, it's been, you know, a paramedic used drug for how long, Nick?
2005.
Another made up statistic. We're doing great.
2004, right? I think.
Fact check us.
Morphine has been part of my practice forever, right? In an ambulance service. When you step outside of an ambulance service and work as an independent paramedic, you can't access it. It's not a paramedic approved drug. And so the paramedics who are working in this sphere of this grey area are actually working at the most fundamental basic of what the national registration dictates. And if I can summarise a bunch of very confusing paragraphs from ARPA, it basically says you can operate to the level you've been trained to operate, but that doesn't take into context what you can access. So if you can't access certain pharmacology, although you've been trained to because of the ambulance influence in your degree, doesn't mean you can access it to then work in this space. This is autonomous practice at its most finite. You are independently practicing, you are independently advising, and you are independently working with no support. And that's frightening to some people. And when things are scary, they dismiss it.
And that probably comes back to another reason why people want those jurisdictional ambulance jobs, is because you get to work under those guidelines. You get to work under the support of, clinical consult lines and whatnot. You don't have that in expedition medicine.
It's also how you've been educated.
Yeah.
I will throw another made-up statistic out, and you can fact-check me, but do you have a single academic mentor or an academic staff member who's working outside of a jurisdictional service?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not that you're aware of, yeah. And that's quite sad.
And if they were, they don't talk about it.
Nick, where were you in March?
I was at Everest Base Camp.
Nick was at Everest Base Camp looking after a team of how many people? Small.
Nine.
But with that comes so many international legalities and ethical considerations and challenges to clinical practice that we can't even begin to unpack in this podcast, right? But to do that, Nick needs specialist skills and experience, which don't translate to a paramedic degree. So one of the questions I think that you got asked by a student to ask us was, how can I work as an expedition medic without extensive ambulance experience? There's an irony to that, isn't there, Nick? You don't need ambulance experience to work in the expeditionary space.
Why do you think they think that is, though?
Again, how many academics do you have who work in this space?
I think also because a lot of the jobs you see that come up on jobs boards ask for a level of experience to vet you. And that's just a very simple binary way of excluding a cohort of applicants. So if you have a job, let's say it's a mining job, and you have 500 applicants, you can simply say, you need 12 months, I can exclude a bunch. And there's also that perception that if people go to an ambulance service, they're seeing patients. If they're seeing patients, they're getting experience. They'll probably be better on paper than the ones who don't have any. We know that isn't necessarily true. Mm. So I think the legacy is that a lot of these private jobs have asked for experience as a way to separate the pool, and that translates into a perception that you need that level of experience. Mm. I didn't use any of my ambulance experience on any of the expeditions I've been on.
No, so I think we could draw a line between the resource sector and the expeditionary medicine sector, because the resource sector has been heavily fortified and built based on an ambulance model. Mm. You know, every experience, they've all got medical directors, they've got ambulances. It's basically a private ambulance service, and that's okay. The transition should be relatively easy. I would certainly encourage any graduate, any paramedic with any experience to apply for those, because they will take the blinkers off what you think you know and put you in an area that just continues to grow and develop you.
So someone like me, I'm going to graduate. I don't have much experience as obviously a paramedic. Would you say apply for those jobs?
Yes,
100%.
Yeah, okay.
Are you a registered healthcare clinician?
Once you graduate.
I will be.
Do you know we have the same registration?
Regardless of your role.
Day one registered, the same as me.
The flip side of that, Lou, is my first academic job clearly stipulated I needed to have a master's to even be considered, but I applied anyway out of practice. And when I got the interview, I kind of was amused. And when I passed the interview and got offered the job, I assume they mixed up paperwork, right? After I'd been in that job.
They're still looking for that paperwork. Where's the good one?
After I'd been in that job for almost 6 months, I felt relatively comfortable to approach my supervisor and say, was I the only applicant, right? And I was told, no, there were 10. And 8 had the level that was required.
Yeah.
2 didn't. I was one of the 2. But to put my supervisor's words bluntly, basically said the other 9 were dickheads. They did not like their ethos or their character.
Based off their interview.
So sometimes you've got to make your own luck and just try. That's not the first job I applied for that I got. I had applied for about 50 in the academic space over the years, right? But it's just if I had not bothered, I wouldn't have got it. So you never know, right? They, you know, the resource sector will always say we want this much experience, but it doesn't. If that translated to real world outcomes, half a dozen grads that I've recommended down that route wouldn't be working in the private sector right now. And a lot of them have said they will never look back. They're on more money than a jurisdictional service. They do a 7-on-7-off roster. They've gone through so much professional development, like, you know, breathing apparatus, road crash rescue, vertical rescue, confined space, all kinds of things. A couple have even done some diving courses. You just don't get that opportunity in many of the JAS. Now, this isn't to slag off jurisdictional services. This is just to shed a spotlight on other aspects of paramedic care. I would still encourage and recommend anyone to apply for JAS. You will get clinical exposure. You will get experience.
What's JAS?
Jurisdictional Ambulance Service.
Yep,
sorry.
I knew that.
You will get all of those things and it will build you. Mm. But it's just when you flip it to the other side, there's so many people in our profession that look at people even working in the resource sector like they're not a real paramedic yet because they haven't worked for an ambulance service. And to me, that's madness.
Yeah.
Now, when we speak about how to get a job as an expedition medic without experience in an ambulance service, that's an easy one, right? One of the questions that I get asked a lot is, how do I get started in the expedition medicine industry? And I say to them, well, what do you want to do? You know, I've been fortunate that I've crossed deserts, I've worked in tropical areas, I've been underwater, I've been on top of the ocean, I've been in the Himalayas, I've been in the Arctic. I've been very lucky, but come on, I've been doing this for 2 decades. That wasn't fast, that wasn't quick, that was 2 decades of work, right? The very first expedition I ever got on was in the Himalayas, and I actually paid my own seat on it. And the only reason that I could go on that was because I was a climber. And this is one of the problems with the ingrained institutionalization of paramedicine is paramedics mostly hang out with paramedics. Well, they're going to take you where other paramedics have gone. Mm-hmm. Whereas during all my student training and even my early years of paramedicine, I was climbing. I was climbing and I was climbing and I was climbing, and I learned how to climb, I learned how to rappel, I learned how to abseil, I learned how to lead climb. I ended up using it to actually get part-time work. So rather than chasing overtime shifts, I was actually guiding on weekends. And when an opportunity came up for the Himalayas, I had the right non-clinical skill set. I was a paramedic, they needed a medic, but I was also a climber. And so when people ask me, how do I get started, I will often pitch them with a question. Well, what do you want to do? Or what do you mean? Well, do you want to work in the ocean and the mountains? And what do you want to do? Most people, through lack of creativity, will actually say they want to go to the Himalayas. They want to go climbing. And I say, great, are you a climber? Oh, no, why was that? No research project, no film, no TV show, no one is going to take a medic who can't climb to the Himalayas, because rather than being an asset, you'll be a massive liability. And this is where, in something like expeditionary medicine, the focus needs to be on what we call non-professional technical skills, non-clinical professional technical skills. If you want to work on an Avatar movie, you better be a dive master at the very minimum, if not a technical diver or a commercial diver. Right. So my message to these people who are interested in working as an expedition medic with no ambulance experience is, get experience in the very element that you're going to.
Get some skills in what you're interested in. If you're interested in climbing, go to your climbing gym.
Exactly. And so, I mean, I was lucky. I went to about 8 or 9, you know, Himalayan and Patagonian expeditions before I even remotely started looking at jumping in the water. And then I had to build myself up past dive master so that I could actually guide and support people in that environment.
So back to that, to answer that question, is if you want to get into expedition medicine, ask yourself what you are most interested in, whether that be climbing, diving,
fall driving, motocross, ultra running, kayaking.
Ask yourself that, and then that'll lead you down that path to, you know, look into different avenues for work.
And don't be in a rush to get generic, you know, like, because people say, I want to do everything. Well, believe me, everyone wants to do everything. When you get to an advancing age, or, you know, an advancing place in your career, if you have been climbing for a decade, if you have been diving for a decade, if you have been kayaking for a decade, I'm blessed now. I would literally get phone calls every week for something, and I can pick and choose what I'm going to do. But it wasn't quick. So, you know, if there's a second year out there that wants to work as an expedition medic, spend your next year and a half of your degree climbing every Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Find a climbing club. And if they even decide that they're going to go from climbing in, let's say, Brisbane or Sydney, wherever they climb, they're going to go to Morocco and climb something there, pay your way and go, because it's going to be something on your CV you can use later.
Mm.
Tell them you'll bring a kit.
And you don't even need to go to Nepal or go to Peru and go on these big, big adventures. Even just going and climbing down the road, or go for a dive on the weekend, or go for a multi-day hike and camp in a national park within an hour of your house. That is all experience.
Mm.
And that's low-hanging fruit experience.
Looks like I'm going four-wheel driving on the weekend.
But it's
a good excuse to go four-wheel driving. Yeah. Like, oh, it's for my career.
For my career.
The one thing I will say, though, Lou, is when we're talking about alternative careers, Nick asked a very important question. What do you hope to get out of this? Now, you had said job security.
Mm-hmm.
You had said money. What else did we have there, Nick?
We refer to my notes.
Yes.
There's a dollar sign. identity, purpose, and security.
All right. The identity is a funny one, because I think anywhere in medicine there is a little bit of arrogance that needs identity, but I think we also need arrogance to be able to lead certain complex situations. So I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Status, you'll get that. Yeah, you get that. I'm an expedition medic. I've just crossed a Patagonian ice cap. Whatever it is, it's fun. But when it comes down to job security, I have watched some colleagues over the last couple of decades who have tried to make a real career of this. Now, I'm not saying do or don't. I'm saying it wasn't ever going to work for me. What I learned to do was pick up 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 expeditions a year max, so that I would still retain an element of joy in what I was doing. I would watch some of my colleagues attempting to make a full-time job out of it, but they spent so much time away from home, friends, family, that they would burn out quickly and forget why they even started to do it.
Yep.
They would grumble about going all kinds of exotic and unique places, and it's a shame, because there are ways that you can turn it into a career too. I mean, you know, there's plenty of remote clinics. There's, you know, work for the Red Cross. There's all kinds of things that you can do. But certainly now in this stage of my life, I have no interest in doing that in a full-time capacity. Younger, I certainly did a lot more, but I had a realization quite early on that I wanted to retain the joy of why I was doing it. And so this is why I say I'll still encourage people into jurisdictional ambulance services or the resource sector or educational jobs, because the expedition medicine frame at the moment has no job security. Nick, what is a, or even Lou, you might know this, what is a paramedic hourly rate in Australia averaged out to be? Without all the add-ons.
Nine.
Without the add-ons, the average paramedic rate would be probably $45 an hour.
So about $450 a day. What is the minimum I've been paid on an expedition per day?
Are we guessing?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
The minimum I've been paid.
We're going to go high.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, we're going to go low.
All right.
I'm going to say 100 to 200.
That was high. Hello. I don't know where we are. Look, the lowest I've actually been paid on a daily rate is $450 a day,
yeah,
which actually is the equivalent of what a paramedic is earning in a JAS. What's the most?
Oh, I like that.
Daily rate. Ooh. This doesn't include kit allowances and everything else. It's just a
1,000.
1,300.
Oh,
that's a good day.
That's a good day.
That's a good day. Now, what that involves is a lot of specialist skills, right? So you're not just paramedicing, you're doing a lot of things, and the risk is huge. You're in the middle of nowhere with people doing insanely risky things in a very dangerous environment, and you are not safe too.
Yeah.
And yet you're tasked with it. So the dollar value goes up. Yeah. But my point is, you can make money in this space. But in order to even enter, you've got to be prepared to not just go for free sometimes, but pay your own way.
Mm-hmm.
The delicate balance, though, is once you have paid your own way, you need to have the ability to negotiate. Hey, I've got experience, at least pay for my flights. Hey, I've got enough experience now, I'm actually worth some money.
Yeah.
You know, I'm taking on liability, I'm taking on risk. And something is certainly not taught in the paramedic educational framework is the ability to negotiate your value. There's too many medicos out there operating in these environments for free when they take on all of the risk, they take on all of the problems, they take on all of their legalities, and they're not remunerated for it. I've never seen a skipper on a boat on an expedition go, oh, I'll go for free, ever. They're always paid. I've never seen an expedition leader go for free. So whilst I understand the delicate balance and the challenges in gaining experience, you've got to take steps to professionalize what you're doing and value what you're doing. And that's the biggest challenge. But that's why I say, like, if you want to climb, start climbing with some people in your local city. And if they then want to go on a trip to New Zealand, go with them, pay for it. But go as the designated crew medic. If you can go as a first aider, it will build your experience to the point where then you can start applying for companies. The irony is people do all kinds of weird and wonderful graduate certificates and things. I have yet. I mean, I've been on, I think I've been on 66 expeditions. Over a dozen of those have been Nat Geo Discovery. Like, it's been awesome. I've never, ever heard these production companies come to me and say, we want someone with a graduate certificate in something important. All they've ever said is, do you have a paramedic who has experience driving small boats around an estuary? Why is that? Are we going to Papua New Guinea to film seabirds hatching? Okay. Do you have a paramedic who has experience in hostile environments because we are going to Syria in the civil war? Do you have a paramedic who has ice climbing and altitude experience because we're filming in the Himalayas, right? They're never fussed about the level of clinical care because paramedic to them is a clinical profession. It is the focus on the non-clinical professional technical skills that I think is vitally important for people to understand, whether they're students or graduates.
We've missed an important item out of what would you get out of a job?
Oh, what?
Selfies.
Selfies.
Selfies. What about family or work-life balance?
Well, I think this comes back to too much time away from home.
Because that made me think of it as in you try and build a career in expedition medicine and you're always away. But also for me, why I try to have a career that has lots of different jobs in it rather than focus all my time on a jurisdictional ambulance service is I'm 30 now. Well, I'm a bit older than
that. Older than that.
Yeah. Don't tell anyone. I'm in my 30s now. And I don't want to do night shift forever. I don't want to ring my wife when we have children and say, I'm going to be 3 hours late.
There's an irony to this statement.
Sorry?
There's an irony to this statement.
What's the irony?
Out on expeditions. And it challenges people sometimes, like, hey, do you want a beer? And I always decline. No, I do not. Right? Yeah. If I'm on an expedition, we're on the clock 24/7. Now, that doesn't mean people are waking you up 24/7. There are some horror trips that you do lack sleep and you're like, my daily rate is not worth this. I'm so tired. But, wow, I just woke up on a Mongolian steppe. Mm. You've got to appreciate what you're doing. But because I was the same, Nick. Night shifts fatigued me, especially when I had kids. I entered that next stage of my life and career. But the irony is the stage that I'm in, I think I actually got more sleep on expeditions than I do at home with my little kids. So I can manage to go away for a week or two and come back, but I know that I'm going to be game on.
Yeah, 100%.
My wife will be flicking me the kids and going, you're up, your turn. So work-life balance, it's a tricky thing. This is, I circle back to that original statement I made about people essentially burning out on something awesome is because they've tried to do too much in too small a time. You need time to reset. I mean, there's people who are just diehard ambulance and they love it, you know, like they bleed the uniform they're in, and we need those kinds of people. But if they even tried to do a shift every single day, every single week for a month, they would also burn out on what they love. Mm. So it's always a delicate balance with these things. I think Nick and I have had a really successful experience in balancing both worlds.
Yeah.
Gaining experience in both areas and literally coming out of both experiences smiling, going, that was wild.
100%.
Interestingly, there was a question someone had asked about an alternate role in flight medicine.
Mm.
And I just wanted to raise that really quickly, Lou. Do you want to fly?
Fly the plane?
No, do you want to jump in the back? It's a plane or a helicopter. What's cooler?
I prefer helicopter.
Are they cooler? Helicopters are like dolphins. They never get old. Like you see a dolphin jump, everyone stares. You see a helicopter, everyone looks at it, right?
I'm that guy that runs outside and looks at the sky.
It's the most dangerous aircraft in the sky. There's no aerodynamics.
A centrifuge. With actually, the one rotor that's stopping it from spinning out of control.
It actually bends the laws of physics.
Goes against them.
Right. For some reason, when people step off a helicopter, they feel more important. It's the same person, but they feel more important. Mm. And everyone looks at them like they are. And that's fine. That's cool. But certainly within Australia, it's a difficult space to enter with no experience. So years and years ago, I actually had a student, Matt, and all he wanted to do was be a flight paramedic. And he copped a bit of ridicule from people because he was quite vocal in his desires. And he was basically discouraged by everyone above him because they had never had the chance to do it. Mm. It's the only thing I can put it down to. No, you will never get that opportunity for at least 10 years. Put it out of your head. Just focus on becoming a good paramedic and working your way up like everyone else. Mm. And he said to me, what should I do? I said, go somewhere where there's no flight paramedics. Mm. Like, I've been flying in places like Vanuatu and Fiji and Samoa for 10 years. Anyway, he did. Long story short, his second job in EMS and paramed was in his second year, and it was on a helicopter as a helicopter rescue officer. And now he's a flight paramedic, and that's all he's done. So people will be so quick to tell you what you cannot do, but it is because they lack the creativity or the courage to step outside the norm, which in this case is JAS and doing a graduate diploma or whatever else.
That's jurisdictional ambulance.
Thank you. I wasn't aware.
And actually do something different. Now, there are those who will also criticize what they do not understand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you shouldn't be putting someone with limited experience in the sky. It comes down to non-clinical technical skills. Mm-hmm. If he has done all of his flight training, if he's done all his static line winching, his airborne rappelling, if he's done his aircraft familiarization, tell me he's not the right person to be there over a 10-year veteran with no flight experience.
What's the difference between putting him in a helicopter versus putting him in an ambulance in a remote environment?
Because the people with experience want to look cooler.
Well, it's the same thing.
I'm being serious.
It's a space to look after someone with limited access to help.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you're in a helicopter, plane, vehicle, dog sled.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
You're still going to be looking after
it. It vibrates and it's louder and it crashes more often.
He's flown more hours than most people. Amazing. I know.
And I take that back. They don't crash that very often.
So, look, Lou, the alternative careers, the conversation can actually be as wide and as varied as we could want it to be. We're always limited with time. But what I would say to anyone with limited experience or even people with experience is if you want to work in these alternative careers, start researching the skills that are needed to do that. And you will be amazed at how quickly opportunities come to you if you have the right skill set. Paramedicine is one piece of paper and one skill set. It doesn't matter if you're critical care, primary care. Well, primary care actually helps in this space far more than critical care does.
Oh, 100%.
But it's just focusing on what is actually needed for these environments is what is going to take people successfully. The last point is networking.
Yeah.
Knowing the right person. But, I mean, the exciting part is 10 years ago, you know, the thought of a paramedic getting on an expedition was slim to none. You know, like we were literally operating in such a difficult space. Now they're everywhere. As early as 2019, I went on a Mars medical simulation in the US, paramedics in space. People laugh, but the paramedics are going to enter into jobs that we haven't even thought of in the next 5 years. And it's going to take the younger minds who are challenging the status quo and not taking no for an answer who are actually going to do it.
Mm. I would even say that if you are looking to do postgraduate education with the hope to get into alternative pathways, you're better off studying primary care paramedicine than you are critical care paramedicine.
Interesting. 100%.
Far more opportunities. There are very few opportunities for a CCP in the private sector. Very, very, very few.
Interesting. Busted that myth. You would think it would be the opposite.
Look, I might have offended some people today, but it is, it's just, it's a lived experience.
You've got to have these conversations.
Yeah.
Otherwise, nothing changes.
Oh, you guys have inspired me. I'm going to go look at some forward driving courses. Get back to you.
Lou, last year I got asked to join an expedition driving across the Lut Desert in Iran.
Oh, man.
I said to my wife, can I go? She said, no, you're already going somewhere else.
Oh.
I said, okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
No, she does let me go at least four times a year. She's amazing. She's wonderful. Aww. I've got small kids at home. I value the leash that I'm on, but I will also not abuse it. So I asked her knowing I was going to get a fat no, but I will pass that to you next time.
Yes. Great.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I think that's all we have time for. If you have any questions, qualms, queries, or concerns, reach out to us. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. You can find us online at www.theshiftextension.org. But until next time, see you later.
He's got a cool voice.
He does. I'm a bit jealous.